Love, spit, love, am I wrong? Good evening to you. It's Cambridge 105, community radio in your city. And the election panel, which I should start off by warning you, is a recording this week, only a day or so old. We're doing this on Monday evening, but just in case something dramatic has happened in the intervening period. Let me introduce my guest to you. James Yowd is a former election agent for the Greens in Cambridge and indeed for the European elections as well. And Kerry Jones, social media activist with an interest in health, I think, and also public policy as well. Good evening to both of you.
Evening, Gillian.
Thanks for coming in. So much to discuss, really. Where should we start? If we go perhaps with the Chimali Fernando and wristband gate, which seems to be the gift that keeps on giving, really, as much as anything else at the moment. What are your thoughts on this? I could start at the beginning, really. Was she right to sue a rival candidate?
Well, this is an interesting story that has come out of Varsity this morning and is now in the Cambridge News Online. The risk of going and attending an NHS hustings and being misquoted. I personally think that it is something that obviously... she is not got a prospect of winning in Cambridge, so it is obviously something she has a very strong view about. The fact that she believes she has been misquoted, she believes Julian Huppert has implicated her in a situation. She is, of course, a lawyer, so this is also grist in the mill. And
you could argue that as a lawyer, she should know better, really.
She should.
Well, yeah,
she should know better. I mean, I would say that her action is one of libel. I was reading up earlier on today, of course, the previous threats from the 1983 Representation of the People Act that have given rise to basically the misrepresentation of candidates' views. The last instance was Phil Wallace in Alden and Saddleworth in 2010 when Elvin Watkins sued him successfully in the High Court, and he tried to take action against that but ultimately stepped down. Was something because the election was so close. I think it was 103 votes. I don't think Chimali, even she would in her wildest dreams assume that she would come within that spitting distance of defeating either Julian Huppert or Daniel Zeichner. So it must be really that she really passionately thinks she didn't say that, and she believes strongly that her reputation has been tarnished, and that is something that she's very reasonably entitled to.
Well, I'm guessing here, Kerry, one of the things about being a Conservative candidate with the political climate within Cambridge at the moment, not mm-hmm. that long since we've had a Conservative MP for the city, I think you only have to go back 25, 30 years, which is relatively not... long ago. So if you're a Conservative candidate and you look like you're going to come third, then surely your objective is to become as close as possible to the person who comes second, to give them a good run. Conservatives came second last time, after all.
I can understand that, but I'm not entirely convinced that... Well, no, I'm not convinced at all that they would come second this time. I think the polling data, you'd know more than I would, James, but...
I think when Lord Ashcroft, yeah. As last set of data, put Julian Huppert in the lead. His previous mm-hmm. data, of course, prior to that, had suggested Daniel Zeichner yeah. might win. So arguably between Daniel and other Julian, it's all to play for.
Certainly, it would put Chimali in a very relegatable third place.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not convinced that it's... doing her all that many favours to be taking this action, especially this close to...
I guess the question is, as James suggests, doing it, if you like, to defend her good name and make sure you know that there's no question about what she did or didn't say, and then to go into what happens next time as to when she's on the selection panel, perhaps for the Conservatives elsewhere in the country, or maybe in Cambridge again. We don't know.
Yeah. It's a difficult one because I think that she would have perhaps done herself slightly more favours by actually saying, look, I didn't mean it like that. If I've been quoted elsewhere.
Did you think that the way it was handled was wrong, perhaps, rather than, because people make mistakes, are misquoted, misheard, misspeak, whatever, however you want to describe it. Not necessarily what happened at those hustings, but what happened afterwards.
I think there's an old Chinese proverb that says you don't use a cannon to kill a fly, and that seems to be what's happening. I think for the campaign in general in Cambridge, it is a headache for Julian Huppert. If I were Julian, it would not be something that would necessarily take precedence in one's mind, but it would be certainly, it is taking off what the real campaign is doing.
Does it harm Julian Huppert, I guess, is the question which follows.
I think, Julian, from the polling, which I'll come on to, the Ashcroft polling, I think it would maybe muter his rating that is far ahead of the national rating of the Liberals in general. And as I say, it is an unwelcome diversion for Julian Huppert. I think Shamali would only be doing this because she probably thinks that as the 2010 candidate Nick Hillman, that this is a stepping post onto being selected for a more winnable seat for the Conservatives, and this could come back to haunt her if perhaps she is on the record as doing that. I think it's disingenuous though, because I think it is really it's something that very rarely happens in elections. There is a very low proportion of claims in which this would be successful. And also, I would make the point that from Julian Huppert's point of view and from a general view of the accusation of libel, this is a centuries-old law which is used usually by the very rich against certain publications and newspapers of late, which in the public mind is a distraction. And I don't think something that would be popular, actually, especially in Cambridge.
The other aspect to this is, of course, Twitter. Saturday morning, I woke to discover, or somebody else had told me, I didn't bother to check myself, that Shamali had pulled her Twitter account.
Yeah,
she'd claimed, and later the Varsity reporting, that they'd even been so far as death threats. And this whole death threat business, as we've seen with Jeremy Clarkson and Sue Perkins and all of this ridiculous Top Gear nonsense. As a journalist, I don't even doubt it's still a news story on that regard. But from Shamali's point of view, deleting your Twitter account in the run-up to an election where presumably you would want to use Twitter in order to promote yourself? What would you say to that as a keen
really
Twitter user?
It's really interesting for me because I remember her coming about as a Twitter user because of the event last year, Be the Change. At that event, there was a 008 or whatever it was.
Because her handle was Where is 007, wasn't it?
Yeah. She's not that entrenched by way of in Twitter.
She was there. I guess she had a presence on Twitter, didn't she? But it wasn't as if one would expect, quite frankly, that the account might have been called Shamali for Cams or something similar, rather
than
Where is 007, which is a little bit sort of in the shadows, really.
It says to me that she doesn't necessarily have that much of a handle, as in kind of her team, on using social media to her best advantage. And I think that this this, you know, is obviously, to me at least, part of that, the whole...
Do you think she's actually getting, and James, you'll know from your experience on this, you know, is she getting the support? What sort of support would a Cambridge candidate expect to get from their head office, whoever they might be?
I suspect in pecuniary matters it is much, but I suspect in media matters it is quite low. I think that, and we will probably get on to Nick Clark's chairmanship of Cambridge Conservative Association,
oh, yes,
who selected her, who has now, of course, defected to UKIP. The fact that, I mean, it's a sort of running joke since she took herself off Twitter of everyone involved in the election in Cambridge is where is 007. And I can understand why she might have taken herself off Twitter. I'm not going to say it's cowardly, but I would say it's undermining her position as a credible candidate. I mean, candidates now in 2015, in 2010 we did have candidates on Twitter. Now in 2015, I mean, there is a lot of traffic going online. A lot of people, of course, up until midnight, you know, if I may mention, today have the opportunity to register.
So it's midnight Monday, to be clear.
Midnight
for anybody listening
Monday.
Now, it's too late.
It's too late now. But I think I don't think it'll affect her vote. I think it's a bit of a storm in a teapot, all of this. As I say, it is a distraction for her, but for her, and Richard Taylor brought this up on Twitter and has probably brought this up on this show as well, that to be accountable in the modern day post-expenses, post the sort of letter writing that one would have assumed maybe in the 20th century would have been the ideal manner of communication, to be a potential MP, and certainly for a party that is going to come very close to power, if not be in power, I think it is somewhat naive. Possibly, it's her first outing as a parliamentary candidate.
But she was in the running at least. Eventually, Brian Paddick. But when she was a Lib Dem, she was in the running
I believe she was a candidate internally in the Liberals in 2012 for the mayoral contest. But this is her first public outing, so to speak.
Okay, thank you for now. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, after some ads and a piece of music, we're going to talk a little bit more about Nick Clark, former Cambridge City Conservative chairman, who's been making hay, I guess. And we'll also go on to talk a little bit about what the candidates can expect in terms of support. I'd like to go down that avenue with James a little bit more, and some polling as well. This is Cambridge 105.
You're tuned to Cambridge 105.
Cambridge 105, community radio in your city. That's Billy Myers, Kiss the Rain. We're in the middle of our election panel this week. James Yound, former election agent for the Greens in Cambridge, and also one of their European campaigns as well. Is that 2009? Okay. And also Kerry Jones, who's a social media activist. I should remind everyone that there's a full list of candidates for the parliamentary elections, which you can find on the Cambridge 105 website at cambridge105.fm. A legal bit out of the way. Briefly to return to Chimali Fernando, particularly actually to Twitter, and the former Cambridge Conservative chairman Nick Clark, who, as we know and covered on last week's show, defected to UKIP. And he seems to have been quite outspoken particularly on Twitter, but also in his blog, covering all sorts of issues. One could have guessed from his blog that he was going to head in the direction of UKIP, quite frankly. But also with regards to Chimali, basically, I could give you an example here. Chimali Fernando sues Julian Huppert. Ridiculous, and probably confirms my view that her political career is over. Another one, my advice is get Tory central office to sort someone out. Deselection. This is unfair, really, isn't it?
Well, I think all that has to be said is that it takes one to know one, and Nick Clark Obviously, defecting to UKIP is a clear sign that his political career was over. I mean,
you think so? You know, he'd like to think that he can command an audience, and does. You know, local radio and local newspapers still willing to listen to him.
I think, I mean, when Nick Clarke, obviously, having lived in, I think it was Papworth, and being councillor for Fulbourne, which the Liberals rather cruelly stole off of him, although some of us were rather pleased, having been leader of the county council, and then having become slightly oddly once again chairman of the City Conservative Association that selected Chamali.
That's the strange thing for me, I think, is the fact that he was responsible, at least the figurehead, for the committee that selected her. Mm. And now one wonders if there's something we don't know about.
Has
potentially there been some sort of falling out over something tremendously trivial that has sparked all of this?
It's highly likely. That usually happens in parties, especially parties as small as the Conservative Association in Cambridge. I'd just go on to say that I wasn't at the UKIP meeting in Arbury on Friday evening, but I believe Richard Taylor has put out on YouTube a recording of him telling people send people home, and saying that if they were at his dinner party, they'd send him home. I think the people of Cambridge will probably say as much to Patrick O'Flynn and send him on his way as well.
I should briefly mention both Richard Taylor's and also Anthony Carpin's regular filming of the hustings events, which, if you're into local politics, that's quite a nice little thing to get a good guide to what's happening on the ground here. Two other things, and I noticed quite interestingly on Twitter, Rupert Reid, the Green candidate, was asking for crowdfunding again. It's there's like a final boost, trying to take advantage of the last few weeks and the additional publicity that he's no doubt getting.
I mean, I've only actually met him the once, which was at the hustings that I went to. But from what I understand, the Green Party has is it quadrupled in size or tripled?
They've done very well
in Cambridge,
and I think nationally.
Yeah, nationally.
Whether or not that translates to a vote, I guess, remains to be seen.
Well, absolutely, but it's a case of them suddenly, I think, having to spend out on actually fighting it rather than perhaps what they would have done before, which is 'cause
the Greens
being quite vocal.
Yeah,
but
the Greens have, you know, high hopes for Cambridge. Mm. One of their, you know, three target seats, which they were aiming to get in addition to that in Brighton.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not very likely for Cambridge, is it, really?
I mean, the precedent that was set was in 2010 when Tony Juniper, who was the ex-director of Friends of the Earth, spent an inordinate amount on trying to get elected, and then came a reputable, I suppose, fourth. I believe the crowdfunding already rose £4,000 previous to this new crowdfunding pledge. I'm not quite sure what they're doing with the money. My personal opinion about what is happening in the polls, of course, the Greens are standing nationally in a lot more seats. The latest polling puts them around 5%, which is about 2% up from where they were in 2010. The Green surge probably peaked too early, as the Clegmania did in 2010. And I would have found it difficult to see that Rupert will enable himself to better double figures, really. I would put it probably below there. What's happening on the ground is probably more interesting for the local elections, but then
it probably is worth a mention, because they're standing in a lot more of the wards and the city elections, I think, this time
around. I mean, when I was the agent for Cambridge Green Party, I think In 2008, 2009 and 2010, we always stood all wards. It was latterly after the late Margaret Wright sadly passed away and subsequently last year Simon Sedgwick Jell, that there hasn't been the capacity, it seems, within their operation to be able to field candidates in all the city's wards. But I mean, I'm really pleased they're standing in all 14 wards. And it's interesting. It should be interesting.
I mentioned before my post account, which is the world's worst polling method. But if you look around this particular part of Cambridge, which is Petersfield, you see posters for the Lib Dems, you see posters for Labour, and you see to a certain extent, probably not as much as the other two, actually quite a few green posters. It's obviously not necessarily reflective of the city as a whole, but it shows at the very least the campaigners have been out here.
Just as a clarification, when you said that they'd do well to break double figures, do you mean as a percentage point?
As a percentage, yes. Yeah. Sorry.
No. I just wanted to be absolutely sure.
I think Rupert is certainly going to keep his deposit. I wouldn't think there'd be any danger. Or would there? I wouldn't think so. He should be okay, shouldn't he?
I would have thought he'll keep his deposit. I think Chris Rand posted on Twitter earlier whether all five of the main candidates, I suppose, including Patrick O'Flynn, would save their deposit. I'm more sure than not sure that UKIP won't, but I'm waiting to be convinced, basically.
What to mention briefly the polls, is there any signs? We had Lord Ashcroft's poll a couple of weeks ago, which I think is the most recent Cambridge poll. How do you think that's going to play out on polling day?
The striking thing is from Lord Ashcroft's poll, and one should intonate it by saying what Lord Ashcroft says himself, which is it is a snapshot of what is happening in the campaign. Nevertheless, of course, it is going to influence voting, I believe, because it's being widely publicised in the media, on social media. The latest poll that Ashcroft did, which was the end of March, which was published just at the 1st of April, were put Julian in the Lib Dems 9% ahead of Daniel Zeichner. Now, even within the margin of error that is 3%, that would comfortably return Julian as the MP. I think from certainly the past couple of weeks, I think it is tightening. As you said yourself, Julian, it's the sort of poster campaign, the poster board war, is not an accurate representation of how people are willing to vote. There was an interesting poll out the other week, which I'm not going to quote in full because I can't remember accurately the figures, but it was asking the question, you know, how proud would you be to tell friends and family how you're going to vote? And the SNP came out highest at something like 30%. Labour was about 18%, and the Liberals were quite a lot lower. So the poster campaign could indeed be underestimating Julian's support. And I think
he did tweet, I noticed at the weekend, that I won't name the party, but Julian did suggest that somebody had snaffled one of his boards and put up their one by in its place. Subsequently been replaced, I think.
This is something I know from election campaigning.
Did this when you were running for the Greens?
I only ever stood for paper candidate for the Green Party, but I do know that people can sort of interfere in election boards, and indeed people can have certain, I won't call it dodgy, but they are slightly dodgy conversations with people that have poster boards.
So boards which have nasty accidents or people in houses.
I remember quite fully the Norwich North by-election in 2009, in which I was I went off and joined.
That was Charles Clark's constituency? This was the guy who resigned because he had an argument with something as well, wasn't it?
He was Ian Gibson was deselected.
Yes.
as the candidate because of expenses. And Ian Gibson was certainly on the left of Labour, and a very popular constituency MP, and Chloe Smith subsequently gained the seat. And I do remember perhaps a drunken night or two of collecting sort of poster boards at about midnight and them having disappeared the following morning. I also remember the defacing of the UKIP large poster board, which said something like, I mingle with Glenn Tingle, who was the candidate.
That's the best slogan ever, I think. That's rather good. You forgive UKIP a lot after that. The other interesting poster, which I noticed, is the rather large one, which is on the front of Alex Wood Hall on Norfolk Street, which I think was tweeted out. And the suggestion was that if you'd like a large poster board like this, and then just contact us, not mentioning that it was actually the Labour Party headquarters in Cambridge, which had this ginormous poster outside of it, tablecloth size. Yeah. Much as anything else. Kerry, what are your thoughts? You've been to some hustings recently. Is there anything which has caught your eye, which has come out of those?
Unfortunately, I've only actually been to one because I had a bit of wobbly health for a few weeks. I was really fascinated. They, even though hustings are always a bit of a difficult one because people obviously want to be interlocking as much as they can in order to do the whole not agreeing with Nick thing, if you get what I mean.
You can't, I guess, by the time you've done a few of them, you know what everybody else is going to say,
well,
don't
exactly,
you?
Exactly. And
so do the audience. If Patrick O'Flynn is to be believed, I think it was Richard Taylor got the paraphrase to say, oh, it's the same in the middle class people turning up every time.
Yeah, middle class liberals, I think it was. Yeah, and it's, I've seen a very large kind of spattering of different people going to them, both on Twitter, having watched Twitter as kind of a, I suppose a.
Do you think Twitter is a good, is it a good barometer, would you say?
Not necessarily, but of the people who would tweet about it, the people that have been tweeting have been.
I guess there's been a lot of good views have come out, haven't
I
think
yeah.
it's a nice sort of, you know, people who tweet are very regularly are quite succinct in getting getting their points across.
One has to wonder with regard to Patrick O'Flynn that he was saying that he's not going to do it because it's the same people and he wants to get in touch with normal, common sense, working class. I'm paraphrasing, but. Yeah.
Which is a fair point to a certain extent.
It absolutely is.
You could say, for the most part, you know, my fellow panellists here on the Cambridge 105 election panels are more or less middle class most weeks.
Most weeks, yeah.
I deny that very much.
I'm middle class.
I would. I mean, I've been to one hustings, but I did watch the hustings on the BBC, which is on the Sunday Politics East. From Adam Brooks yesterday.
This was the one where they all seemed to be about half a mile apart in terms of seating.
They did. I think Stuart White was chairing it. One thing that struck me and that has struck me about all of the hustings, what I've heard and seen, is that there are very clearly two candidates in the running, and that is Julian Huppert, who actually comes across very well, and Daniel Zeichner. And they are talking about local issues, and they're talking about the ins and outs and the minutiae of local issues. What I get from Chamali Fernando for the Conservatives is very much, we are basically working on our record, having been a Conservative government for the past 5 years. What I get from Rupert Reid is sort of a disparate commentary from a general perspective.
And
indeed, when he was talking about housing yesterday, which I'm amazed, as someone that's campaigning on affordable housing in Cambridge, he was talking about completely avoided the question about building housing in Cambridge and was talking about building housing in the north in sort of, you know, places that are perhaps economically deprived compared to Cambridge. Of course, that doesn't really solve the issue of being a Cambridge candidate.
This is quite interesting because both Daniel and Julian are near enough Cambridge people. At least they've been here long enough to understand the ins and outs of the city, whereas the other people, they're good people, but they are good people, in case of Rupert, for example, a councillor in Norwich, and I believe is commuting at the moment between Cambridge and Norwich. Chamali lives in the city, I think on the outskirts, but
Trumpington moved
up and so on and so forth. I think technically Patrick O'Flynn is a local, although he does seem to spend a lot of his time in London.
One of the things I would contrast certainly Chamali with the 2010 campaign is that Nick Hillman, who I think was a very good candidate for very lately selected for the Conservatives in 2010, was a very independent voice. Cambridge demands an independent voice no matter what party it's voting for.
Well, Chamali on the face of it doesn't seem like a typical Conservative candidate,
she
really, of sorts.
But of course, she's defending their record in government. And that doesn't necessarily go well with a certainly centre-left liberal electorate in the mainstay in Cambridge. Certainly the swing vote will be something that Nick Hillman, for instance, managed to, above the odds, get second place in 2010, which I was certainly very surprised about.
So you think he was punching above his weight at that point?
I think he was. I mean, just if I could just go back to the polling, really.
Briefly, we need to wrap up, I think.
I would just say that Chamali is probably punching under the weight of the Conservatives nationally. I think Daniel, likewise, for the Labour Party, and Julian is punching way above his weight. Mm. Whether he can sustain that for the next 2 weeks of the campaign, certainly with the increasing attacks and the increasing look on his record, and with the postal votes going out this week, remains to be seen.
It could be interesting. Mm-hmm. Thank you to both of you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Kerry Jones, also James Yaud. We'll do another election panel next Wednesday night, just after 6 o'clock.
We are Cambridge 105.